Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Spanish National Radio, NHK Japan, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with Spanish National Radio, or Radio Exterior de España. Chileans overwhelmingly voted to reject the constitution, which was drafted under the dictatorship of Pinochet. Huge demonstrations continued in Colombia to protest the government's failure to put into effect the measures agreed in the 2016 peace accord. Paramilitaries have continued to massacre indigenous and rural civilians, as well as hundreds of civic leaders this year. Despite U.S. claims that the war on drugs in Colombia has been effective, this year has seen the largest cocaine crop ever produced. In Bolivia, former President Evo Morales will be able to return to his native country without threat of arrest, though he will not have a role in the government. Venezuelan opposition politician Leopoldo López has found refuge in Spain, from where he will continue to work against President Maduro. Spanish National Radio.
The people of Chile voted overwhelmingly to reject the constitution draft under the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. It was the second time Chileans have said no to General Pinochet and his legacy, the first in 1989 when they voted him out of the Senate, and now against the constitution imposed after the 1973 military coup that ousted the democratically elected president Allende and perpetrated some of the worst human rights abuses in Latin America, as dissidents were tortured and disappeared. The U.S.-backed military coup entailed the imposition of a radical neoliberal economic experiment on Chileans, eliminating all state-owned industries and decimating public services. Transportation, education, healthcare, pensions are all mostly in the hands of private companies, creating a concentration of wealth and social inequality among a population aspiring to the middle class. The neoliberal economic policies were written into the constitution, which Chileans have now rejected. More than 78% of voters in Sunday's referendum rejected the old constitution, and 4/5 of them said they wanted the new charter to be drafted by a specially elected body of citizens, divided equally between men and women, and with indigenous representation. They rejected the government's proposal of a mixed convention of lawmakers and citizens, exposing the widespread mistrust of Chile's politicians. Members of the 155-seat Constitutional Convention will be voted in by April of 2021. They will then have 1 year to draft a text with proposals approved by a 2/3 majority. Among the issues to be debated for inclusion in the new Magna Carta are the recognition of Chile's Mapuche indigenous population, the rights of labor unions and collective bargaining, water and land rights, and essential public services such as health care, education, and pensions. While Chile's status as a democratic republic will be maintained, the role of the presidency will be debated, as Chile's presidential system, following the U.S. model, is the most extreme in Latin America, and critics say prevent an adequate balance of power among the branches of government. Chileans will then vote again in 2022 on whether they accept the new text or want to revert to the previous constitution. Colombia last week saw huge demonstrations as indigenous peoples and rural civic activists gathered from across the country and convened in Bogotá, where they protested the government's failure to put into effect the measures agreed in the historic 2016 peace accords, signed before the current president, Iván Duque, took office. Duque is considered the protege of former president Álvaro Uribe, who campaigned against the peace deal with the FARC. Uribe is currently under investigation for alleged witness tampering in an attempt to discredit accusations of his ties to paramilitary squads dedicated to killing political opposition. Placed under house arrest in August, he was released earlier this month, a move the U.S. President Donald Trump hailed, calling Uribe a hero and crediting Vice President Pence with pressuring for Uribe's release. The Colombian High Court had found ample evidence that Uribe had threatened former paramilitary members, forcing them to retract testimony in which they'd revealed his involvement with the death squads. Uribe resigned as a senator so that he can be tried now by a lower court. Rural and indigenous groups in Colombia fault the government of Iván Duque for failing to protect them from paramilitary groups. According to the human rights group INDEPAZ, where there have been 68 mass killings, that is, killings of more than three people in Colombia's rural areas so far this year. The same group reports that 233 civic leaders have been killed in 2020. Most of the murders have been of indigenous or Afro-Colombian leaders in the western and southwestern coca-growing regions. Demonstrators say that after the peace deal, the war has actually worsened. 4 years ago, the Colombian government and the guerrilla group FARC agreed to such measures as state help for the indigenous farmers to switch from the coca plants used by the drug cartels for cocaine to legal crops, as well as a return for many of the 6 million displaced people to the lands that they'd been forced to abandon. While the FARC guerrilla have left the area, in the absence of government protection, the peasants and their community leaders have come under fire by paramilitary groups hired by the wealthy landowners who have expanded their ranches into land claimed by the displaced, as well as by the drug cartels and other criminal factions. The government of Iván Duque ignored the demonstrators' demands, saying their groups had been infiltrated by, quote, terrorists, while former President Álvaro Uribe accused the demonstrators of being, quote, totalitarian socialists bent on destruction and nothing else. Despite the success declared by the U.S. and Colombian collaboration in the so-called war against drugs, this year has seen a record production of cocaine from Colombia. On Monday, the Colombian Defense Minister, Carlos Olmes Trujillo, announced that the military forces had eradicated over 98,000 hectares of coca. He told reporters the aim was to prevent the, quote, financing of massacres and the murder of civic leaders. He also praised the work of the armed forces, stressing their value despite the, quote, ongoing campaign to delegitimize and stigmatize them. Also on Monday, another Colombian civic leader, Carlos Navia, member of the National Farmers Coordinator, or CNA, and founder of the Regional Community Action, was shot dead by an unknown gunman in the southwestern region of Cauca. The Office of the UN Human Rights in Colombia condemned the assassination of the peasant leader and placed the crime in the context of the homicides, massacres, and forced displacements taking place in the communities of the region. On Saturday, the 17th of October, another civic leader, John Jairo Guzman, was shot dead in the northwestern region of Antioquia. In Bolivia, judges annulled the arrest warrant for exiled former president Evo Morales, clearing the way for him to return to his home country without facing the risk of detention. Following the right-wing coup 1 year ago, which claimed electoral fraud in the presidential polls and prompted street violence, Bolivian prosecutors issued the warrant for Morales' arrest on allegations of sedition and terrorism. The self-proclaimed interim government accused Morales of inciting the unrest, in which 36 people were killed. Judicial officials say the investigation into the complaint against the former president is still underway. Earlier this month, In much-delayed elections, Morales's movement toward socialism, the MAS party, was swept back into power when Bolivians elected Luis Arce, Morales's former economy minister, as president. MAS won 55.1%, obviating the need for a second round. The overwhelming victory served as a repudiation of the neoliberal project Bolivia's right-wing elite had sought to impose upon the country. The October 18th election brought an end to the de facto presidency of right-wing evangelical Jeanine Áñez. Luis Arce distinguished his MAS party from the Bolivian right-wing, commenting, "What did they do when they orchestrated the coup d'etat? They came into government breaking the democratic process, bringing with them weapons and killing people. The movement for socialism has always entered government democratically, with the people's vote. We are a legitimate government and legally constituted." Luis Arce's victory signals a renewal in Bolivia. He distanced himself from Evo Morales, saying the former president's bid for a fourth term last year was a mistake, and he has vowed that Morales would not have a role in his government, though he remains the president of the movement towards socialism, Arce's party. Luis Arce stressed he wants to build bridges across the divided Bolivian society, saying it's necessary to generate a unity government to work for all Bolivians, and that's what we're going to do. We want everyone to participate. We're going to govern for everyone. Despite significant economic successes under the MAS, Bolivia remains Latin America's poorest country, with poverty levels hovering at around 17%. Venezuelan opposition politician Leopoldo López arrived in Madrid on Sunday after spending the past year at the Spanish ambassador's residence in Venezuela to escape house arrest. In a statement, the Spanish Foreign Ministry said López's return to the Spanish embassy and decision to leave it in Venezuela was both personal and voluntary. López pledged to continue helping the political opposition from exile in their campaign to unseat President Nicolás Maduro. López's party, the Popular Will, did not say how he'd left Venezuela, but two people familiar with the matter said he had traveled through Colombia. López was jailed in 2014 for leading violent protests against Maduro and was released to house arrest in 2017. From his Caracas home, he was mentor to the opposition leader Juan Guaidó, who earlier last year declared himself president with the backing of the United States and others and began a campaign to unseat Maduro. In April 2019, when Guaidó tried to spur a military revolt against Maduro, López appeared on the streets alongside. After the uprising failed, López sought shelter at the Spanish ambassador's residence. López's wife, Lilian Tintori, who had joined him at the residence, left for Spain that May. Since then, Guaidó's campaign has struggled to maintain momentum, while authorities have detained dozens of his allies, and Nicolás Maduro has cemented his control over the country. Venezuela's government on Sunday accused Spain in a statement of aiding the, quote, illegal escape of a dangerous criminal in violation of international law, and said authorities would investigate the crimes committed.
Those reports by Allison Hughes were from her program called Panorama, heard on Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website rtve.es or by podcast as REE. Next, NHK Japan. Japan and South Korea announced plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions to zero by 2050, a commitment that the United Nations hopes big polluting countries will follow. A Japanese airline will reduce carbon emissions by using fuel made from animal fat. France and Germany announced new strict lockdowns as a second wave of COVID cases and deaths threatens to overwhelm their healthcare services. NHK Japan.
The United Nations has urged countries to take further steps to fight global warming after Japan and South Korea announced plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions to zero by 2050.
He hopes that these countries that are leading by example will encourage others, especially the largest emitters, to follow suit.
Dujarric welcomed the carbon neutral pledges made earlier this week by Japan and South Korea. He described their plans as a very positive step in the right direction. The UN says net zero emissions will need to be achieved by 2050 to keep the rise in global temperature below 1.5 degrees. One Japanese airline is taking on additional costs to reduce its carbon footprint. All Nippon Airways is planning to begin flying flights soon using biojet fuel derived from animal fat. A company in Finland will supply the fuel made with leftover fat from meat processing. It will cut CO2 emissions by about 90% compared to conventional jet fuel, including the production stage. ANA plans to start using the biofuel from next month. It'll be the first passenger service in Japan that does not operate on fuel derived from crude oil.
Despite the severe business climate, we're taking a long-term perspective by trying to source alternative fuels globally.
The additional cost will be tough for the pandemic-hit carrier. Parent ANA Holdings is expected to post a loss of around $4.7 billion for the current business year. But ANA says it needs to adapt rapidly to tougher environmental regulations introduced around the world. France and Germany announced new nationwide lockdowns on Wednesday as a second wave of coronavirus infections threatens to overwhelm Europe.
I decided that we needed, starting from Friday, to again put in place the lockdown that had earlier stopped the virus.
French President Emmanuel Macron stressed that manufacturing, agricultural and construction industries will continue to operate to minimize the impact on the economy. The four-week lockdown in France will require all restaurants and shops to close, apart from those selling daily necessities. People will only be allowed to leave home to commute to or from work or for health-related or other essential reasons. France has seen a rapid surge in COVID-19 infections in recent weeks. The figure has topped 1.2 million, the highest in Europe, with 500 people dying on Tuesday alone. Experts have warned that the situation is threatening to overwhelm the country's medical institutions. Meanwhile, Germany has experienced more than 10,000 daily infections over the past week. German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced plans to close bars, restaurants, and theaters for most of November. Schools will stay open and shops will operate with strict access limits.
It is very clear that we must act right now to avoid an acute national health emergency.
According to Johns Hopkins University in the U.S., there have been more than 44.3 million cases worldwide. Over 1.17 million people have died.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975-7245 or 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts like a longtime listener of KZYX in Willits, California did this week. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. As I produce this show, there has been a second and perhaps third assassination in France by Islamic fundamentalists. This past Monday, leaders of Islamic countries called for a boycott of French goods in reaction to the French President Macron's response to the murder of a French teacher by a fanatic the week before. By Wednesday, there were massive anti-French rallies in many Muslim-majority countries. Then the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo stirred the waters by ridiculing Turkish President Erdogan and Islamic beliefs on a new cover intended to anger Islamic fanatics. News of the new murders were just breaking as I began this show. Nurses in Poland are on a strike over stricter abortion laws. Then some brief updates on the global COVID pandemic. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is pressing for a boycott of French goods, echoing similar calls by a number of Middle Eastern leaders. The move came in response to French President Emmanuel Macron's defense of free speech after an Islamist beheaded a French teacher 10 days ago. The teacher had shown his students cartoon depictions of the Muslim prophet Muhammad.
Recep Tayyip Erdogan made an appeal to Turks to hit France in the pocketbook. I call on my people. Do not support French brands. Do not purchase their products. Paris recalled its envoy to Ankara over the weekend after Erdogan questioned Emmanuel Macron's mental health, which he did again on Monday. Unfortunately, these attacks got started through provocation from France's leader, who needs to have his head examined. Erdogan also addressed European leaders directly, making clear what he thought of them. You are fascists in the true meaning of the word. You are truly the link in the Nazi chain. France's culture minister questioned Erdogan's motives. There is a head of state, the head of state of Turkey, Mr. Erdogan, who is using what's happening in our country for domestic political gains. The German chancellor spokesman also issued a response. There are defamatory comments that are completely unacceptable, particularly against the backdrop of the horrific murder of the French teacher Samuel Paty by an Islamist fanatic. France has said it does not intend to retaliate with a boycott aimed at Turkish goods, but the diplomatic rift between Turkey and Europe could well continue to widen.
Well, the backlash between Islamic countries and France over President Emmanuel Macron's comments on Islam and freedom of speech is growing. Macron has strongly defended caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad following the brutal murder of a French teacher who used those caricatures in classroom discussions about free speech. Since then, there have been massive anti-French rallies in Muslim-majority countries.
The target of their anger is clear. Here in Pakistan, protesters in Karachi and Islamabad accused the French president of attacking Islam. The behaviour of the French government is actually an insult to billions of Muslims across the world. It's open terrorism and an attack against the Muslim world. We should boycott French products. Muslims should boycott their petrol stations, which is one of their main products. We shouldn't use that fuel at all. In the Bangladeshi capital Dhaka, there were tense scenes as protesters renewed calls for a boycott of French products. Demonstrations also took place in Gaza and in Tel Aviv, all in response to Macron's defence of satirical cartoons, including some of the Prophet Muhammad. His comments follow the brutal murder of a French schoolteacher who taught a lesson on freedom of speech. Leaders in several Muslim countries, including Saudi Arabia and Iran, have condemned France. But the French president is sticking to his stance, saying, "We won't give in, ever." His interior minister echoed his opinion. It's our sovereign right to define what freedom of expression is, what's public order, what's freedom of worship, what is and isn't acceptable. Words that won't serve to calm the growing wave of anger sweeping the Muslim world. France is warning its citizens in several Muslim-majority countries to take extra security precautions.
Well, earlier we talked with Martin Gak, DW's religious affairs analyst, and asked him whether this is mainly about a clash of values or if politics are also playing a role.
I think that Macron has given a great opportunity to a different set of leaders that have found themselves in difficult situations at home. So Erdogan with the economy has had sort of an ongoing confrontation with France recently in the Greek territorial waters. Saudi Arabia is seen as one of the actors approaching warming up to the Israelis, so that is also causing discomfort in the region. And, you know, finding now sort of the French taking this position is quite convenient. At the very same time, I think that the French question is a question that really does have to do with values. And given the fact that a fairly standard Muslim understanding, so Islamic understanding of blasphemy, is that it should be met with violence, the question that, you know, France is asking is whether that kind of Islam, that interpretation of Islam, is actually compatible with French Republican values that have a lot to do with tolerating those things that we find, in fact, offensive. And this is a question that will be, I think, really quite difficult to answer, not just politically, but culturally.
DW's Martin Gak there.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has blasted French satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo for mocking him in a front-page cartoon. Erdogan is one of several leaders in the Muslim world angry about France's response to the murder of a teacher who showed pupils drawings of the prophet Muhammad. Nurses in Poland have joined a nationwide strike against tighter abortion laws. Women are protesting against a court ruling that bans terminations in cases of fetal abnormalities. The new measures restrict abortion to cases of rape and incest or where the mother's life is at risk.
In China, almost 5 million residents in Xinjiang province are being treated for COVID after a local outbreak. Officials say the mass rapid test will be complete in days. The Australian state of Victoria is further easing its strict lockdown after going 24 hours without any new cases. Shops, restaurants, bars will be opening for the first time in a number of months. And Vice President Mike Pence is continuing his election campaigning, that despite many of his staff testing positive. The U.S. has recorded its highest number of cases in recent days.
India has now passed 8 million confirmed cases. It is the second highest number after the United States. But India has one of the world's lowest death rates. Meanwhile, Iran has reported a record death toll for a second straight day. It's the worst hit country in the Middle East. And Taiwan has passed 200 days without any domestic transmissions of COVID-19. Officials are hailing the achievement as a success story.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.